It's time for Caffeinated Comics, a lively discussion and debate on comics, film, television, and collectibles, all fueled by the magic of Frappuccinos. Caffeinated Comics is sponsored by Chimeras Comics. Chimeras is your one stop for comic books, graphic novels, hero clicks, Magic the Gathering, and more. Explore the fantastic at Chimeras Comics. And now, here's your hosts, John and Steven.
Thank you, it's Caffeinated Comics. I'm your host, Sean Clark, and for the first time in 3.5 years, almost 200 episodes, I have no show. I have no podcast this week. What happened was, I'm recording this on Friday, and we're all ready to get together this weekend. Steven and I were discussing what to do this weekend, what to talk about, and then I found out my uncle passed away. So right now, as I'm recording this, I'm packing to get on a plane to go to New York this weekend. My Uncle Jimmy was a fireman for New York for years and years and years. He was a captain. I believe he got up to a chief. He was also the funniest guy I ever met. When I was a kid, I wasn't just his nephew. I was a fan of his. He was a guy who could tell jokes at a barbecue and command a room. And he was a guy, when I was 8, he gave me the entire plot to Creepshow, which I was not prepared to hear. And even up to the end of his life, he got sick in 1999, and the guy went for 17 years. And he usually looked great. The last time I saw him was a few years ago at a wedding. And every time I wanted to ask how he was doing, and he would always just kind of shrug it off and talk about something else. And I think the last time I saw him, he just kind of grabbed my arm. He said, "Are you watching Justified?" And I was, because my dad was into Justified, and I'm into Elmore Leonard. So we just talked about that, and he was always like that. We used to go up to on vacation for a week every year up at Lake George. And I remember one of the last times I just kind of stopped by their cabin, and he was just inside watching TV, and I was like, "What are you watching?" And he's like, "Ah, it's a show, Monk. It's just starting. I think it's pretty good." And we watched the pilot of Monk. He was he was very New York neighborhood Irish guy, but he was so keyed in to entertainment and pop culture, and it affected me a lot. His son Kevin was my age, and he was a huge Spider-Man collector, still is, has a tattoo of Spider-Man on his arm, and I would go to Kevin's room when we would read Spider-Man comics, and it was that kind of combination of going to that house, of that love of movies and television and comics, and that being funny and smart and sharp and quick, that I tuned into it very, very, very quickly, and that's one of the reasons that I do this every week. So I'm about to fly out. Steven is not even at the shop today. He is at his house working on the comic that they had the Kickstarter for, The Magnificent, which went through. So now he actually has to finish the comic. So there was nothing to do. But you know, we never wanted to miss an episode. We didn't want you guys to think that we just flaked off or we weren't interested. I know a lot of podcasts start out and they can't sustain themselves, and we've never missed a week. The first few months we started bi-weekly, but once we went weekly, we've never missed an episode, so I didn't want to mess with that, and I didn't want to miss an episode this week. It's not a big news week, and the only couple of things I've been thinking about. I know Game of Thrones is up and running, and I'm still not watching it. And you guys can tweet me at Not In My Book to tell me why I'm wrong to not do that. Every single person I talk to tells me I'm wrong to not do that. And then I usually respond to, "Well, I watched The Walking Dead," and then they're okay with me. The one new geek show I'm watching is Preacher, and we've had 2 episodes so far, and I wish I liked it more. I wanted it to be a great show. I wanted it to be a show that the next day we would do a whole podcast about, because I love the Preacher book. It came at a time when I was so ready for it. It was this punch in the face to what Vertigo was, because Vertigo was created for existing books. So, you know, Alan Moore Swamp Thing had been running, and Neil Gaiman's Sandman had been running. And then they realized, hey, we've got a lot of these British guys that are writing really dark stuff that we probably don't want Superman and Green Lantern to be in, we don't want kids to read, so let's create an imprint. And it lasted, it's still going. Some would say is a shadow of its former self, as they poached characters like Constantine and Swamp Thing back into the DC universe. But it, in the 90s, it was going really well, but it had gotten to this point where everyone wanted to be Neil Gaiman. And Neil Gaiman is a visionary genius, and Sandman is one of the greatest books ever. And early in our show, we talked about mature comics, and we talked a lot about Sandman because you cannot ignore it. It's like not talking about The Dark Knight Returns when you're talking about Batman. And the problem was there were some spinoff titles, and then there were just a lot of books in that mold. There were books like Fairies and Books of Magic, and they were decent books. And Swamp Thing had become less horror and less shock, and everything had become very introspective and kind of Ren Faire. And other than Neil Gaiman, it was kind of ebbing a little bit. You had Grant Morrison in there, but he hadn't really done the big thing. He was, I think Transmetropolitan had just started, but that was always kind of a cult book. I actually bought the omnibus to that and never finished it. It was very of its time. Grant really exploded when he brought Vertigo ideas to DC. So all of Vertigo was wrapped around Neil Gaiman. And all of a sudden, here comes Preacher. And Garth Ennis, I believe, had already done Hitman, which was, I like to say, like a Guy Ritchie movie taking place in the DC universe. It was tough. It was a beer drinking, no bullshit kind of sense of humor. It was, and then when he did Preacher, it was like a punch in the face to what Vertigo was doing. And it was unlike anything that I'd ever read in comics before. It was just like when Tarantino broke, which was about 2 years before the book launched. You had never seen anything that brutal and swift and violent and funny and smart and was thinking three steps ahead of you and just had an attitude that you didn't want to mess with. And I fell in love with it. It exploded as soon as it came out. I remember I was working at Bulletproof Comics when the first few issues came out, and all of a sudden Wizard got behind it. And back then, Wizard was the MTV of comics. There was really, that was the news channel you got. And all of a sudden, these books started flying out in a way that Vertigo never did. Vertigo was, even Sandman was revered, but it never did the numbers of the X-Men. They said that Sandman had its own following, but people would come in, buy Sandman, and not buy anything else. So it didn't really tap into anything greater. And Preacher was the first Vertigo book where I started to see the back issues climb, and they had to rush the trade paperback out. And this was at a time where you didn't have 35 trade paperbacks every week, where you didn't have every story arc collected. It was for really great stories that had sold really well, that were out of print, where they could collect the whole story in one. And, they would always reach back and find first appearances of characters and run Bronze Age and Silver Age tales, and you had those trades. But we didn't live in a world where you had omnibuses and Marvel Masterworks going to issue volume 20 and covering everything. I mean, right now I have in hardcover a run of the Uncanny X-Men that starts from Jack Kirby and goes up to Joe Madureira, and with very, very few breaks. We didn't live in that world then. A trade paperback was a special thing, and you kind of had to think about whether you wanted to get it. And that trade paperback came out right away, and I read it, and I just couldn't put it down. And then that was the first year it was out. The second year, I was at Art Asylum, and everybody kept talking about it. What Garth Ennis and Steve Dillon were doing was just so strong and was so powerful in a unique way. And it just had this tone that I've never seen any book ever have before. Even Garth Ennis's other books. Garth Ennis and Steve Dillon did a really, really good run on Punisher after Preacher, and it didn't quite have the same tone. They knew exactly what they were doing. There's a one-shot where Cassidy meets another vampire. If you haven't read the book or seen the show, there's a character called Cassidy who's an Irish vampire. And it was in the the Interview with a Vampire, the Anne Rice mold, and it took a direct shot at Neil Gaiman. And it's Cassidy finds these vampires who are very foppish and take themselves very, very seriously, and he smacks them in the back of the head and takes them into a church. There was a Key and Peele Halloween sketch where Jordan was a vampire and he was really mad at Keegan, who was a vampire, but he was still dressed in like a hoodie and jeans because all he really wanted to do was be immortal. And it was like that. It just didn't care about what else was going on. They name-checked Bill Hicks for like three pages just because Garth was, I think, was pointing to this is what's important to this universe. It ran 66 issues. I bought the whole thing in trade. I bought it in monthly for a little while and then just said screw it, went back and waited for the trades. And I loved it like an Elmore Leonard book or a Quentin Tarantino film. And it was very, very specific. And I hold it as a gold standard. It's my favorite book of the 90s. I think it's the best book that anyone made in that decade. So it had been optioned, I think, while it was still running. It ended in around 2000. And I think, and I know Kevin Smith was trying to get it made for a few years. And there were a lot of people trying to get it made. It never happened, never happened. And then Seth Rogen and Evan Goldberg made it happen. And I'm not feeling it. I think maybe I love that book too much that I can't quite let go of what it is. There's a shift in tone here. It's not a road movie the way the original book is. We're spending a lot of time with Jesse, who's played by Dominic Cooper, who I love as Howard Stark and I think is miscast in this. I think everyone's miscast in this. They're all good, but they don't feel like those characters. And I'm wanting to like it, but it feels like it's trying to be Walking Dead. And it's doesn't quite have the budget of Walking Dead. And it's just not home together for me. If you guys are really liking it, tweet me. And now my book, tell me why. But I think I'm going to stick with it just because I tend to stick with things like that. I watched Terminator Genesis last week, which is terrible and not even worth talking about. But I watched Terminator Genesis because I've seen every Terminator movie. So here's another Terminator movie. What did they do different? Well, they did everything wrong. So I'll probably stay with Preacher for as long as it runs. But I don't know if anybody could do it right. I think it's too precious in my mind. And I want to know from you guys if that's me being too protective or if it's not quite hitting. Anybody who's listening, you know, tweet me or leave a comment on caffeinatedcomics.blogspot.com and let me know what you think or our Facebook page. Honestly, you can talk to me so many ways. It's ridiculous. The other geek thing, I think we will do a whole podcast about this, but I want to mention this. If I'm going to do a greatest thing in the world, I just bought the entire complete Peanuts from Fantagraphics. And the final volume just came out, which wraps up Charles Schulz's run from 1950 to 2000. He did exactly 50 years of this strip. Never missed a day. Never had an assistant. He, I think towards the end, maybe they reran some, but for his peak, he was there day in, day out doing these characters. And we had kind of a resurgence of Peanuts in my house. Sebastian loves Charlie Brown and Snoopy. We bought the Peanuts movie, which I talked about when it came out. I loved it. It wasn't a brilliant film, but it did exactly what you wanted from that property. And I've seen it like three or four times now with my boys. But it made me start thinking about that strip. And it was one of those books, they would release one of those books every 3 or 4 months. And I would go, you know, I should probably start picking those up. And then for one reason or another, I just kept putting it off. Honestly, it's like, oh, I should pick up the complete Peanuts. But hey, there's another hardcover of X-Men of stories that I've already read. So I'll put my money there. And I saw a listing on eBay for all of them. And it was less than half the price for a book. And both my boys are into Charlie Brown and Snoopy, and Sebastian's not yet three, and he knew who Schroeder was, which kind of put me over the edge. So I'm flipping through these just randomly, and they're just brilliant. I always said Charles Schulz is a work in progress, a piece of art that shows you what bipolar depression is, because there's 3 weeks of everything's fantastic and I'm going to be, and Snoopy's the Red Baron and he's Joe Cool and he's flying around on a sub with Camel, which is actually Doc Hudson, he doesn't care. And then there's like 3 weeks of Charlie Brown talking about killing himself. But I think it's wonderful. I think I'm going to save more of what I think about that strip, which was a huge influence on me growing up. And I still adore to this day. I think we could save that for a whole hour. But speaking of bipolar depression, my other recommendation, if you're not watching it, is Maria Bamford's show, Lady Dynamite. I'm a huge fan of Maria Bamford. I think she's a brilliant stand-up comic. She's a gifted voice actress, which she moves through her stand-up. And she's really confessional. I first saw her when the Comedians of Comedy started, which was Patton Oswalt and Brian Posehn and Zach Galifianakis and Maria Bamford. And she was the only one I'd never heard of. And she's done a lot of bit parts and things, but she's created the show with Mitchell Hurwitz, who created Arrested Development. And they put it out on Netflix. It was kind of under the radar for Netflix. I think Netflix is getting to a point where they're launching so many shows, they don't quite push all of them. You know, like, I'm hearing about Orange is the New Black for a month, but I don't really hear much about BoJack Horseman, even though that's done 2 seasons, which I haven't seen. So Netflix is getting to this point where there's a hierarchy. And I think Lady Dynamite kind of slid under the grate of what people are noticing on Netflix. But it's fantastic. She did 13 episodes. It's goofy, it's silly, it's bright, it's fun. It has jokes that are very much like Arrested Development, but it's also incredibly confessional. Maria Bamford suffers from bipolar depression, and she took a hiatus from her career to seek medical attention. And she moved back in with her parents in Duluth. And at the time, she was putting out YouTube videos of just like her and her pug in bed. And she did a stand-up special, which I believe Netflix ran, of her giving doing a stand-up hour in front of her parents in the living room. And that was her life. And that's what this talks about. This is about her coming back to L.A. after living in Duluth for like 6 months to a year after a really bad major depressive episode, and kind of how she survives and how she kind of gets back up and deals with the Hollywood machine and is open and frank about mental illness, which is something we're still not there yet. There was a lot of discussion when Robin Williams passed away. And I think that elevated things, but it's still not quite there. We need to talk about mental illness the same way we talk about illness in the rest of the body, and we're not there yet. So I think this show is really brave and takes a big stance. And it's funny as hell. I'm just really, really enjoying it. That's all I got. I got nobody else to bounce off of. I got nobody else to disagree with me. Working on some Skype interviews. Haven't landed any dates yet. I would have, if I had gotten one in by this week, you would have had it. Not a lot of huge releases. We're looking at Star Trek soon. We're looking at Suicide Squad soon. You could toss a coin in the air and tell me if I think those are going to be good or bad. But, you know, there's a lot to the rest of the summer. So we've got a lot of shows. We definitely have a lot of shows. We're at a moment where we don't. But yeah, it's always nice to talk to you guys. You guys are good listeners. I like that. You know, you don't interrupt. Because I always do. Well, you can follow me at Not On My Book again. Talk about any of the topics that we're talking about today. You can listen to us on iTunes. You can subscribe there. You can leave comments there if you want. There's a couple. You can listen to us on Stitcher. And you can listen to every single episode we've done, whether it's interviews with Noam Bregfogel and Chuck Dixon and Fabian Nicieza, or weekend coverage of the big movies going back to Iron Man 3. Or just evergreen topics, just like, let's talk about what the Justice League is for an hour. There's a huge variety there, but you can listen to every one of those episodes at caffeinatedcomics.blogspot.com. I'll be back next week. Somebody else will be here, and we'll be talking about another topic for a long time, probably over an hour. We try to make the show an hour. It's never an hour.